This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning. This is Frida Liu, and you're listening to Enterprise. We've got the folks from Digital News Asia here to talk about the tech ecosystem. We've got Zof Azmi, Kiran Kaur Sidhu, Chong Jin Seung, and Karamjit Singh. Hey, Of course, we're going to start off talking about some of the stories. We're going to start with you, Zof. You recently went to Singapore for the Visa Security Summit and wrote a story on how Visa is turning a problem upside down to find malwares. And this is a fight against fraud, moving up another notch.
Well, yes. So I was lucky enough to attend the Visa Security Summit. And obviously, security is a big issue for a company like Visa. Mm. The trust that's in that company and their products is only really there because you believe that their products are really secure. Yeah. And what they said was, even now, they do a very good job of limiting fraud. The numbers they gave was for every $100 of transaction, there's only like 10 cents or less of fraud, which sounds pretty good. Okay. But they want to do better.
Yeah.
And the reason why they feel they can do better is right now, the way they normally detect fraud is that users submit complaints and say, look, my credit card was used when I didn't use it. I'm submitting a report. And they can't act on just one report. They have to get lots and lots of reports, and it takes a long time. Mm. And a lot of people have to be cheated, as it were, before they can find where the source of the leak is. So what they've tried to do now, they're trying to find ways of, as it were, stopping fraud before it happens. Mm. And this delightful person named this lady from Visa called Penny Lane,
which is such a serious?
Penny Lane.
Serious,
such a cool name. She she spent a
funny parents.
she spent a session talking about one of those new initiatives, and she was talking about fraud. And so fraud clearly has shifted from the analog world of bricks and mortar stalls to the electronic world of e-commerce, and it's just helpful to explain the way e-commerce fraud, the one that she was describing works is if you go to a website and they have an online store and you submit your details, if everything's working well, only the shop gets your details. But what is now happening is that hackers are coming in and they're adding a little bit of code on the web page so that when you submit your details, instead of it only going to the store, a copy of those details is sent to some evil malicious server in the middle of the internet. Mm. And this malicious central server then collects all the details from all these websites that have this flaw in it. So usually it's like, it's some sort of e-commerce software that many, many shops use, and they all have the same vulnerability. And the evil hack, I'm using the word evil.
Because they are evil, yeah.
Evil hackers then use like a little program that goes through all these websites automatically and hacks them in the same way. Mm. So what Visa have managed to do is they've realized that they can turn this to their advantage, because once they know a website is compromised, they can track the packets sent to this central server. And then they go to central server and they sort of like stake out the server, and they see as the server sends packets to all these other
servers. So they are spying on the server then, yes, once they locate spying.
That's right. So once they locate that server, they can see the traffic. They can do analysis of traffic that comes to that server. And then from one compromised website to the central server, they can maybe detect another 500. Hmm. Mm. And what they say is, let's say a legitimate website sends traffic to the central server. Then they visit that legitimate website and they sort of look at the legitimate website. And if they detect something's amiss, they then alert the owner website and say your website.
I'm just thinking of two kinds of shopping scenario, right? Scenarios, right? One where if I do online and then we have our tech, I think, I don't know if that helps. Another TAC comes in, temporary access code, right? I'm just talking about two scenarios here, maybe not directly connected. So whether that is a great deterrent, but then there's also when I go to a physical store and I just put my PIN, and I think maybe that one, the PIN, maybe a little bit is a bit more.
Well, they were specifically talking about websites in this particular example. Mm-hmm. And the tag issue is a separate thing, because what the bad actors are trying to do is they're trying to get your personal details, including your credit card number.
Right.
And and they're trying to just collate this very, very large list. And I think I found the other day, right, a good credit card record can sell on the dark web for like $20 a record.
Mm. Wow.
So, you know, they're not necessarily acting it on themselves. They're just getting maybe a million records and then selling it off to yeah. somebody else for yeah. like $20 million. Yeah. So, you know, I clearly am in the wrong business here. They just want to collect these lines mm-hmm. of data. So the fact that you do your transaction and your transaction is secure is a separate thing. They just want your personal details.
Wow. Yeah. And sold on to bad actors, lah. They call them bad actors.
Earlier on, you were talking about for every 100, 10 cents.
10 cents.
10 cents, which is what? 0.001%. Right? Okay. And why are they doing this? Why is having a summit, Visa itself having a whole day summit around?
Oh, so the bigger picture, and this is partly me sort of looking at it from slightly outside, it's clear that Visa realizes they're not the only game in town when it comes to electronic payments. The rise of e-wallets, especially in China, is clearly a competition. Visa have identified this region, this zone, as being the number of users that will get onto the internet, that will need online banking, that will need digital payment solutions, is going to rise drastically over the next decade.
Okay.
So they see this as a very, very burgeoning, growing market, but they also see a lot of competitors waiting in the wings. Mm. So what is the thing that differentiates Visas from these competitors? Security is going to be one of them. And yeah. I agree with them. It's going to be something that they should step forward and say.
And I think it should always be a concern. You know what I mean? I mean, it's something that we should always be aware of.
I mean, you say this, and yet, if you have an e-wallet and they promise you 20% off on the next purchase of something, users aren't always thinking security first.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's all I'm saying.
Yeah. I fall for that. What? 20% discount on the next purchase? I think I'll go back.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, correct.
It just happened to me the other day.
Is it there,
but I didn't go back. Oh, I didn't go back. I held back.
Okay. You resisted.
I resisted, right? Okay, moving on. You were also at a Swaram event yesterday.
Yes.
Something about data privacy, but you can't talk too much about it.
Well, I can say what was discussed, but I can't say who said it.
Who the other actors? Why was it a confidentiality clause?
Not a confidentiality clause.
Just your internal self censorship.
No.
Anti-fake law where you were internal self censorship.
No, I mean it was one of the ground rules that Swaram had. I mean, I would have to go to that individual concern and say, is it okay if I quote you? Okay. It's you. And I unfortunately didn't do that for everyone who talked. So I think the easiest thing to do is I'll just make it anonymous.
Yeah.
The individual said no.
Said
no. Did she say no?
Anyway, my session was about moving on.
Frida, what did you have for breakfast this morning?
Frida. Very perky. the session was on data privacy. Okay. And we did actually discussed a number of things in the session. I thought it was a very fruitful session.
Good.
But one takeaway I got from it, which I didn't realize before the session, was that maybe Malaysians... So this idea that Malaysians don't care as much about data privacy as I think they should.
Mm-hmm.
And it may be so because Malaysians don't understand what the impact, the dangers are. Mm-hmm. And we specifically used an example, that telco breach of 42.6.
Purported, those numbers are one party told me they're grossly exaggerated, but nobody knows here until the police finish the investigation because, you know, MCMC won't talk because they say it's a ongoing police investigation now.
So
that's the official line. Yeah.
Yes.
I mean, just want to say that because the number, I don't think it's 42 million, but it's just been thrown out there and nobody can investigate, right? So take that with a grain of salt.
So Karam is saying this, my blood is boiling already, right? Because like we still don't know what really is about. I mean, that's really the big issue. Mm. My point was that how come there wasn't more outrage? Mm. How come there are more people not getting very upset that this personal data seems to be compromised somehow relatively easily, and nobody is saying anything about what the risks are, what you as an individual should do, whether you've been impacted by it. I mean, the fact is, for me to find out if my name was one of those breached, I have to go to a third party website when it should actually be something that's run by a really trusted party, like the government or even like the telco themselves, right? Mm. So, so
previous government.
Maybe because previous government not trusted. Government so is I. Correct. That's the first thing that comes to most people's mind. Right?
Now.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, but I mean, we look at what has happened with Facebook and Cambridge Analytica and everything. You know, it's an outrage, and in the US, of course, this news gets filtered, and we get a little bit outraged. But really, are we? You know what I mean?
Yeah. Are we outraged? It's like outrage light.
Yeah.
It's like, you know,
outrage
it's like,
light.
It's like outrage, and then okay, like we have other things to do.
Yeah.
But the feedback I got was that maybe the outrage is not so great because there's still a lot to be understood about what the risks of this data being exposed is. And I was just discussing this in the car on the way here. And the most obvious one is that, and then there was that breach, alleged breach yesterday of Astro subscribers, right? Hmm. The simple thing is that I get that line of record. It has your name, it has your phone number, it has the fact you have this account or this mobile phone number, and has all sorts of details. And I can call you and I can pretend to be from the organization. Mm. Yeah. And because I have all these details, yeah, I sound legitimate.
Yeah.
And that is like the simplest con.
At its simplest form, yeah, right?
And yet, it can be so effective in getting, you know, oh, you know, you're late on the payment. You know, you have to make your payment. Can you make a payment of like $1,000 to this account, right? Mm. And because you believe it's genuinely them,
and you heard so many people gonna, you know, I mean, they've been conned that way. Usually the older folks.
Usually
the older folks. I mean, but also I think where it comes to, you know, sometimes you go shopping and they say, oh, can you fill up your form and everything? I said, why do you need my details, right? So the most I'll give is my email, right? And then what are you going to do with this information?
Is it even a real email?
Yeah, right? You know, exactly, right? Do we have to put the real email? And then they ask my race and my, you know, I'm like, why do you need to know my race? Why do you need to know what it is? You know, if you want to, I'm buy makeup, right? Why do you need to know my race? You know, is it the foundation needs to be lighter? Yeah. What, you know, why, right?
My expertise in makeup is not quite there, I'm afraid.
No, but when I was telling Zoff, Frida, it's very basic, right? So whatever data breach that happened around the telco, and someone said there were actually medical records were part of that. So whatever it is, nobody has been hit in their pockets, right? Where it then becomes, where it matters to you. And I guarantee you, for all those people listening out there, the 101 of you out there right now, any buka puasa you go for, you know, that you've been for already till the next week, you know, I guarantee you the conversation will not even touch on data security. You know, even now with the Astro one just happened, it probably wouldn't make the conversation at all. And that gives you an idea of how unimportant that is. Yeah? Because people haven't been hit. If somebody's been hit and suddenly you get whacked by 1,000 ringgit and you're fighting it and you cannot disprove it and then you got to pay. Yeah. Then you see that angry person talk about it. Every family function, every person function.
Yeah.
It's going to almost happen at a micro level like that to go out and before people get, you know,
fearful
and be much more concerned.
People are so worried about this, you know, identity theft,
yes,
right? Correct. Where they can use your details and start doing, you know, getting loans, getting all these things. It's like, you know, I mean, that's the danger.
I think, loan's difficult. The threshold now is so high, but there are some things that could be done. The easiest is using a credit card to buy stuff online. That can be done so easily, but... Right. You know, as careless, as casual as I am with my credit details, I think I've been hit. Actually, my credit card has been used by people a couple of times, you know. And I never even bother. I look at my credit card statement, hey, I was in this gas station in Butterworth, you know, and then I'm back and somebody whacked me for like 79 ringgit or whatever. And I just forgot about it. Can you imagine how I'm the best friend of all these bad actors out there, man. Hopefully very few people are like me because I'm terrible with personal security, you know.
And you just reveal that to, you know, 34 people.
Yeah, exactly. 101.
All right, we'll continue with our conversation after this. I'm here with Zoff Azmi, Kiran Kosidu, Chong Jin Seong and Karamjit Singh from Digital News Asia. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9.
Before Friday materializes, BFM 89.9.
You're listening to Enterprise. Good morning, Frida Liu here. I'm here with the folks from Digital News Asia, Karamjit Singh, Chong Jin Seong, Kiran Kaur, Sidhu, and Zoff Azmi, talking about the tech ecosystem. Jin, Malaysian startup Clean, spelt with a K, wins Picture Palace ASEAN 1.0, and you were in Singapore to witness that. They didn't come to Malaysia this time, huh?
No, okay. So the ASEAN summit is the ASEAN version of Pitch at Palace happened in Marina Bay Sands. So Kieran and I were over there, so we witnessed the program over there.
Yeah.
So yes, Clean did come through, but who are they? So basically,
Never heard
they So they are they are energy and green tech. I guess you can call them green tech because they are into the renewable energy sector. So their solution is quite interesting. Actually, it's interesting. The founders, one of them is a chiropractor by the name of Dr. Nick Borden.
Okay.
And actually, he runs a clinic in Plaza Damas, over in KL. And actually, he came across this problem where he was running another.
He gives back to society.
Society.
Okay.
So he was actually having a program. It's called Lend a Hand, where they 3D print prosthetic limbs for people who are not able to afford them. And to do this, they were getting like a lot of plastics in order to like, I'm not sure how that works actually, whether the plastics go towards the 3D printing process. But he said they received a lot of plastics during this time and they don't know what to do with it. So what better way than find another solution for your existing problem, which was finding what he calls a reverse vending machine. So Clean is the project and the company, and they have a reverse vending machine whereby people, when they go to the vending machine, they can put in a plastic bottle or aluminium can and they can convert that. It will recycle it on the spot and it'll convert it into one of several things. Either you can get talk time with DG, Hello Gold, Nano Gold with Hello Gold for investments, and also Touch and Go points as well.
So it's clever because it's not money, but you
directly
get something back, right?
Yeah, but you get something of intrinsic value. Mm. So he was talking about how in ASEAN, across the world, there's so much plastic around and it's really destroying the environment.
So there is a vending machine like that already?
He has a prototype. I'm not sure it's a prototype, but it's not mass market yet. Mm-hmm. He has several around, but it's not quite everywhere yet. His ask during the Pitch at Palace session was to try to get funding as well to make about 50 over of these vending machines to put around Malaysia, Singapore and Thailand. So they want to go regional as well. And they try to reach out to government-linked companies as well or corporates that are interested in saving the environment. So they're putting it out there that, you know, hey, we want to do this. So, I mean, at the same time, it's a two-pronged process. I mean, two-pronged process. You get a safe environment and he's helping those less fortunate and in need. So, like, he wants to make it such that plastic bottles and such is not something that you just throw away, but it's something that you want to change the attitude of people and, you know, have them recycle plastic bottles. You know. So it's like, okay, it's a pretty good. I think we were both pretty much impressed by the showing
and
that they had.
They invited us over to check out the machine. They have a machine in their clinic right now.
Right.
So we hope to check it out. Yes.
Okay. So I know 2 years ago we had two winners, right? I mean, we had a Christy Ng, who also got to
that was the Malaysian arm, and Aaron Sharma, Touristly. Now it's called
VD.
What?
VD.
VD. Yes. Yeah.
VD, as in because they think the future is video. Okay.
Right.
Not exactly, but they are coming off an app. Actually, I saw. I spoke to Aaron while we were at InnoFest as well.
Oh, he was there.
So he told us that actually they are coming off an app as well. So you got to download it on iOS and and Android. I haven't
BlackBerry.
Seen it yet. No more.
Ooh,
I guess.
What? Okay.
Just throwing that curveball there. I saw the GLC CEO using a BlackBerry. I say, hey man, it's still alive.
Okay. And then let's talk to you about your favorite topics, like gadgets. Okay. The ASUS ZenFone Max Pro M1.
Yeah. So I tested out this phone. It's a mouthful, yes. But I guess it's worth it in the end because it's got a really big battery. So it's a 5,000 milliamp battery. Most phones in general have about 3,300 milliamp battery on average. So this is like not quite double, but it's significantly bigger. So you'd be surprised, it's actually a budget phone at 699 ringgit.
Serious? Okay.
Yeah. So you get the big screen. So this is on par with any of the 6-inch screen or so. Wow. If you like a lot of screen real estate, this is pretty good. The processor is running on is a Snapdragon 6, Qualcomm 636. This is typically a mid-range processor. It's very prevalent throughout any phone that's between, right now from 700 ringgit up to 1,300 ringgit. So this is a fairly decent power efficient processor. It's got dual cameras, so you like to take photos a lot, it's fine, but it's not the greatest camera I tested out. That's probably the I think the biggest downside to it is that it doesn't have a very good camera. But aside from that, if you're just trying to like browse the internet, go around, use it as a second phone if you're traveling, I say it pretty much meets all those standards. The other thing I didn't quite like about it is that it's using a micro USB port. So like right now, if you're using a newer phone, there's a Type-C port, meaning those that you don't have to like flip around and find the right side to put it in.
Okay.
So like this one is back to the one generation before.
Okay.
So you have to find the right side when you want to put it in. And if you're carrying, let's say if you have a newer phone, you've got to carry two cables along with you, two different sets of cables. So that's the only downside to it. But like I said, at that price range and the big battery, I think that's probably the biggest claim to fame and probably the best feature. Mm. I think it could comfortably get me through the entire day, and I still had enough battery for maybe the second day. Mm. So like I say, it's pretty good. Yeah.
Right, for that. I mean, if you were to compare just phones at that price range, you probably won't get that kind of.
I think it's pretty hard to find one, but ASUS. ASUS has made this is not the only phone they've made under this series, but I think it's probably quite attractive. In fact, they're doing some flash sales at 599 ringgit on certain days. Mm. So you can, I think if you want to check out something and want to have a second phone with a big battery in one, then probably you should try to check this out.
Okay, all right. Cool. So I guess something for the mother maybe, now or a kid. Now, an iCandy Interactive is a Singapore and Malaysia-based game publisher has acquired an Indonesian mobile game developer, Joyseed, as part of its plans to expand its network of studios across Southeast Asia. Wow, very ASEAN, huh?
It's quite ASEAN stories today. So iCandy, yes, I spoke to Desmond Lee. Mm-hmm. So he's the chief operating officer for iCandy.
Desmond's Malaysian, though.
So he's Malaysian, but iCandy is listed on
Australia ASX.
Okay, wow.
So they took a 70% stake in Joyseed for $188,000. Primarily, this is to try to get their legs into Indonesia. And so happened that they connected at Casual Connect in Singapore actually a few years ago. So the matchmaking was already happening since then. Mm-hmm. So they were quite interested in Joyseed because Desmond told me that specifically that they were different from other Indonesian developers in the sense that they really had a focus towards regional. Most of, according to him, a lot of Indonesian developers, they tend to go very hyper-local.
Definitely, yeah.
Whereas these guys really, they had a different sense of art style.
Okay.
They seem to have ambitions to grow their game, not just to be like Indonesian focused or anything like that. In fact, their first game is called Hollywood. Hoot at the end. Okay. So it's a parody of Hollywood. And you play as a director that is trying to make it big in Hollywood, and you kind of make like, I wouldn't say knockoff films, but parody films or famous films.
Right,
and then you
try
to do it. But then, but apart from that, also, he was telling me that, you know, apart from this acquisition from Indonesia, they also acquired some games from a Hong Kong company called Animoca Brands. Mm-hmm. So with that, they're going to add 300 casual games into their portfolio. And he definitely needs to hire more people to support these games that is coming on this portfolio.
All right. Okay. So anyway, if you have any questions for the folks here, you can always WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899. Don't ask any questions to Karamjit because the answers will be very long. you know, but if you have questions to the rest of the other folks.
I haven't spoken at all today, man.
Okay.
I'm proud.
Kieran. Okay. let's move on to some enterprise stories. So Celcom Axiata is now working together with Microsoft Malaysia to enhance customer service by introducing two virtual agents powered by Microsoft's AI and machine learning technology.
Yeah. So this is their effort to go digital, right? Their digital transformation effort. And they've introduced these two virtual agents. If you log on to their website, you can see it in the bottom right-hand corner. Yeah. So the names are quite interesting. I'll talk about that first. So they're Clive and Emma.
Clive and Emma, okay.
Yeah, so we raised this, like, why does it sound non-Asian? And it was interesting. So he said Clive was derived from Celcom Live.
Oh.
And Emma, he said, it was initially supposed to be Aisha. So when I say he, I'm talking about Renee Weiner. Yeah. He is the customer service head. Mm. And he said it is a modernized Asian name.
I guess Emma works around the world.
Yeah, it does. It does.
Right? It does work around the world. It's easy to pronounce and that kind of thing.
But you don't need something like that to work around the world when you're, a national specific telco, right? Your customer base are all here.
Yeah.
So I would have preferred a more, you know, Asian, like, you know, a gourmet core or something, right? Yeah.
So anyway, they're saying that they want to offer a more humanized touch through these agents and all that. So although it's a chatbot, they're using Microsoft's natural language processing capabilities, and they don't want it to be so static and pre-scripted. Mm-hmm. But as of now, it's only available in English.
Okay.
So they're asking, like, are you going to introduce? So I said, yeah, with time, Bahasa Malaysia, maybe even a combination of both.
Mm. Yeah.
And also Hokkien, all the localized languages, they want to go to.
I think you definitely have to go Malay.
Of course,
definitely
absolutely. I'm surprised with Celcom's database, customer base, you would think Malay would be the preeminent language and they would start with that.
Well, they say a combination of Malay and English is already available now.
Oh, combination lah.
Yeah,
okay.
But not fully Malay.
Okay,
yet.
Okay.
And they've invested, so they didn't give the exact figure, but it's above RM 1 million and below RM 5 million.
Okay.
But they said this is just like the initial investment, and there will be incremental investments going forward. Okay, so this is just a starting point for them.
Yeah, okay.
Hmm, interesting. All right, and we'll talk about other stories in just a moment here with Karamjit Singh, Chong Jin Seung, and Kieran Koh Sidhu, and together with Zof Azmi from Digital News Asia. Stay tuned to Enterprise, BFM 89.9.
Bodacious, fabulous minds. BFM 89.9. The Business Station.
You're still listening to Enterprise. Frida Liu here. We've got Zof Azmi, Kieran Koh Sidhu, Chong Jin Seung, and Karamjit Singh from Digital News Asia. You know, we're talking about what's happening in the tech space here. And earlier on, Kieran, we were talking about Celcom Axiata and their AI technology. They're working together, Celcom Axiata and Microsoft, right? And then you had a question, Karam.
Just about the impact on the existing talent, right? How is this going to impact them?
Yeah, in terms of job displacement, you mean. So this question was raised.
How direct this Kieran is, job displacement.
Well, they raised this question, and their response was that in the past, I mean, they've been growing over the past few years. Their customer base has grown. So with their customer base, they've been hiring more and more people to accommodate the demands. But they have said that, you know, they're not downsizing. They're definitely not downsizing, but maybe they will contain hiring going forward because of this. Yeah.
Okay, so then you can minimize and then, you know, natural attrition.
Yeah, exactly.
And moving on to M Investment Bank, the bank-backed research house initiates coverage on End-to-End Connect a Buy rating. What's the story about?
Okay, End-to-End Connect, they're a public listed company and they provide trading solutions. And they
for stock exchanges, that's important.
Yeah. And they acquired AFE Solutions last year, 31st March 2017. AFE Solutions is also a trading solutions provider, and they are based in Hong Kong. So following this acquisition, let me just talk about the revenue a little bit. So they have actually doubled their core net profit has grown at a compound annual growth rate of 32% from 16 million. And this research by M Investment, they say that the market has not fully priced in the major earnings boost from the acquisition. So going forward, we'll see a lot more progress. You know, they've projected more earnings, and they said that this is mainly because of a lot of cost savings. Mm-hmm. So one of it would be from the relocating of his HQ office to a more economical location. So, and also they get to cross-sell their trading platforms to AFE's clients as well. So yeah, a lot there.
So AFE, because they're based in Hong Kong, but they've got a very strong institutional, you know, base of clients in Hong Kong and China, and they've got a lot of retail customers also. So we did a story about the acquisition last year, and you can, if you go to DNA, you type in the keywords end-to-end and acquisition, you'll see a lot more about that Hong Kong acquisition. But it looks like now it's obviously having a positive, very positive impact on the bottom line of end-to-end, which is why now they're in the radar of brokerage houses too.
Yeah, also one more reason why they will be going up would be they're introducing their new product. Actually, this is not really a new product. This was already developed in 2014. But back then, it didn't really take off because for traders to upgrade to that would have required them to take on the full suite of the solution, you know, and it was costly for them. So right now, they've introduced incremental changes. So to just introduce new functionality that they would need, you just pay for that amount.
Okay.
So they're expecting it to really take off.
And you know, as a Malaysian, you know, a grown technology company, right? Started out in, I think, year 2000. So credit to them. And by the way, I think they had an announcement to Bursa day before yesterday, a Japanese company. They already have a Japanese investor. Mm-hmm. And now a second Japanese company has come in to invest in them also. So I think just watch for end-to-end. I think they're going to do really even better moving forward. And credit to Andrew Tiang, the CEO and founder.
Okay. Now, Karam. Yes? You are now working on an article that will be published later this afternoon. Yeah. We'll see. But you're doing so reluctantly because your interest in this story was triggered by a malicious infographic making unsubstantiated accusations against the CEOs of MDEC, HRDF, and ADEX. Spicy.
Yeah, spicy. So, you know, I was reluctant too, but, you know, it didn't. So the reason why I decided to work on the story was because it's ADEX. So ADEX is the Asian Data Exchange Center, and we are, you know, MDEC is positioning it as to be the data center resource hub, you know, talent hub for ASEAN. Mm-hmm. So it's bigger than just Malaysia. And I thought I didn't want to just let this rest because then it affects, you know, ADEX's branding, right? And then, you know, parties outside of Malaysia, you know, if they get this WhatsApp message, they say, hey, man, oh, man, oh, what's going on, man? We better not partner with them till we know what's for sure. And then, unfortunately, and whether rightly or wrongly, I think you got MDEC there. And actually, Yasmin's picture is flat center in this infographic saying that, you know, accusing her of having stealing, you know, people's money. So, and I met with the HRDF CEO, Dato' Vix, yesterday just for a quick chat. And he said, you know, now with the change of government, everybody is coming out of the woodworks and going after everyone. Yeah. And whether it's true or not. So it's tough. And I spoke to one minister of the, you know, the current government, and he says, you get so many of this going on, you don't know where to start or end. And then you cannot do your own work, you know, your mandate to the people that you promised. So how, you just got no time to go after all this. But then, unfortunately, for the CEOs who are in the crosshairs of something, baseless accusation like this, then you're sweating bullets, right? Because suddenly this accusation is out there, and then you're being advised to keep quiet and just explain to your relevant minister, whatever. And I believe Yasmin has gone to see Minister Gobind about this to explain. I was told she's gone to see him and explain the position, but still nervous days, right? And then today's paper now, you see, you know, Telecom Malaysia CEO stepping down, you know, and then Bank Negara change and others coming. So I thought, hey, you know, in this is our space in the tech ecosystem, let's find out. And you speak, you know, so I spoke to ADEX, and I spoke to Kat Sharala, who's, you know, and Ernst & Young, you know, a woman entrepreneur of the year, and she's a Digirati, DNA Digirati 50, Yasmin is also. But hey, what's going on with this, you know? And then Sharala explained to me the processes they've gone through, you know, and then I spoke to Vix also. He also explained the process. So, you know, you create an infographic layer, you put the headline, you know, scandal, you know, how many, you know, this is in this case over 100 million, and then you exaggerate stolen money, right? Yeah, that's the key thing to trigger people, right? But the reality is different. When I spoke to, 2015 was the thinking of Yasmin and MDEC that you want to make Malaysia a data center hub. So it's great, right? We've got ambitions to be just a hub, not like like in Indonesia, because the market size, they think Indonesian first. Here in Malaysia, we want to think ASEAN or Asia first, right? So we want to be the data center hub because the space is there to be grabbed. So hey, let's position this. So create ADEX as the brand to trigger that. They presented it to the previous government at the ICM, which is the implementation and coordination meeting. And then, you know, the government liked it. Then they said, okay, because this is a talent, right? So ADEX will be the hub for knowledge exchange and knowledge learning and upskilling, right? So a lot of programs around data science. So they said, okay, because you've got data science, hey, HRDF, you've got the funding. You know, you allocate the funding for this program. So HRDF allocated a certain amount. And it will be in my story, so I want people to read the story also.
Okay.
And then, so the amount is that different from the accusation. And, you know, it's not stolen. Nothing has been stolen or whatever. And then they're accusing Yasmin of having an interest in a company involved in that. That's not the case at all from what I've investigated, you know, right. So... I mean, it's just annoying, but I don't want the ADEX brand to be affected because then it's the brand Malaysia affected, right? Oh, it's still going on. And then people say, you deal with MDEC. Oh, no, I think I saw one of my staff got a WhatsApp about something. Hey, let's not touch this yet. So this is to put it straight that, you know, this is not the case at all. And then, you know, they got a third party involved, which is the National Big Data Association. So a lot of the due diligence in selecting companies who are training providers for ADEX was done, you know, at the National Big Data Association level. And then, you know, you go to two levels of committees, and then, you know, there's a selection committee, then it consists of MDEC, of National Big Data Association, and one person from HRDF. So you got three people then making the final pool of companies that we think these guys are creating good programs that we can offer, you know, under ADEX, because then it's subsidized, right, through ADEX.
Mm.
So we approve this. Then they send the approval list to HRDF. And HRDF then, although they have somebody sitting in the three-person selection committee, they then do another level of due diligence and say, yeah, all these programs are legit and robust enough, right? People who go through them will come out being better in what they're supposed to, you know, learn from the program. Then they channel the funding to National Big Data Association. Okay, you know, Frieda and Associates, right, proposed this program, you know, a 50-pack, you know, 2005, okay, give them the money for that, you know, however many people come for the program. So this, the level has gone through. And then also Sharala with CATS, because they were picked from open tender, they were picked as the party best suited to run, you know, ADEX for the government. And then they're also, of course, a training provider, right? So they also come in, but then they've created another level. They brought in a big four accounting company. And this was all done last year before this, you know, this WhatsApp started spreading one week ago, right? Conveniently. Hey, you know, can we make the governance more robust on their own last year? And then this big four company has come up with suggestions of some more steps you can do to make the process more robust. So basically, if you're a taxpayer listening out there, people who are responsible for this are doing, making sure that, you know, the process is rigid and robust and the governance is there, so that the, you know, the value is felt, you know, there's bang for the bucks for public money being used here, right? Mm-hmm. And nobody's out there to cheat anyone, or, you know, this company is associated to me and I'm getting something there, whatever. So it's annoying. And then I was reluctant to do this, Frieda, because then I don't want someone to say, oh, great, you create another infographic and I'm going to investigate again. I just want to do this. And remember the one from Dash before, right? And accusing a few people. Also did a story on that. But after this, I'll stop. I won't do any more of this. And if people want to know, you know, if they're thinking somebody's going to get in trouble because of that, then let me know and I'll just find out directly, because I'm DNA is blessed that we have access to the right people. We can quickly get to the source of something, you know.
Right. And I guess
this is terrible, right? And, you know, so going through this emotional anguish of poor Yasmin there, right? Already you're worried about your position. Maybe is the new minister going to make changes, or, you know, she's, and I've said it in my article. I've said it here. She's doing a great job as CEO. But is that good enough now? So,
and that's the thing, right? Fake news is a double-edged sword, right? So it can go either way. And I think if you've been rightfully doing your job and doing things the right way, you really shouldn't have to worry about it. But, exactly. But it's interesting, like you say, you get these sort of things, and then we just investigate.
Yeah.
And at the end of the day, it is still responsible reporting. When you hear one side, you still have to hear from the other side and get to the root of the...
Correct.
The
so in these cases, you'll never hear the other side. The other side is a party that created this infographic or made these accusations. So you never, they're not going to come up and say, Karam, I think you're wrong. Hey, look, this is my source. No, they've got robust governance going on. You don't bring a big four then to further improve on the governance, right? And then you don't have to get association involved. No, I was very pleased to hear that. And then, you know, I spoke to Suresh Nandan, who's the president of the Big Data Association. And I said, you know, when this came out, why didn't you put something up on your Facebook to say, look, you know, guys, this is not true. This is the process we went through to select the vendors. No one party has got a bigger outsize, or it's a monopoly of this. There's no self-interest. And he said, you know, Karam, and this is the reaction of the average people. You know, when I saw that, I was shocked. And I say, wow, who is making such, you know, malicious accusations? And then they just keep quiet and stay put. They don't want to raise above and say, hey, you know, I think it's wrong. Your average person, when you get something like that, even though you're in the know of it, you retreat and say, hey, man, what's going on? And then, you know what his reaction was? He said, I told my entire family, don't believe anything you see on social media. This is proof that it's all fake. Can you imagine? That was his biggest lesson he learned. But I told him, you should put something out, the association, on their Facebook page. But the average person doesn't think of that, you know? You have written books on PR and all, and your listeners on the station are well-tuned, ready to know what's going on. But the average person just gets scared. Hey, what is this? Better wait. Instead of being proactive and saying, guys, this is BS. This is in my space. I know it's not true.
Right. Okay. So we'll look out for that article.
I just want to get one number right, and then I'll run it. I think probably by 2 o'clock to your call this afternoon, and get
four.
It out there.
You should get it by four.
Yeah, I go for my child four, like I know before. 2 to 3.
Alright, I'm seeing the folks with Digital News Asia, Zof Azmi, Kiriko Sidhu, Chong Jin Seong, and Karamjit Singh. This is Enterprise BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.